Tech WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This is going to be a fun one. All of our intelligent conversations are brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. Having wise chats around here now and getting back out. We have a new sponsor, too. I want to give some love to the Chaucer up in Highland Town. Grew up there. Brian Eater and I grew up together. Stop by, get a beer, get some wings, say hello. The Crab Cake Tour is getting underway, and we will be eating crab cakes there. We were Fadley's the other day. I'd love to have a crab cake with this guy. If he ever gets to Baltimore, to this place here, because this place here becomes relevant at some point. Will Leach has been doing it longer than anybody, and if you're familiar with Deadspin back in the day, and certainly his television work now, and his authordom, as I follow all of the writings of the writer down in Georgia these days, the book is How Lucky. And Will, man, I think when I think of you, I think of reality Will. Like, you know what I mean? Like nonfiction Will, sports Will. Give me like a little rebrand on you, because my hair's grown and I used to be doing box scores last time we got together. Now I eat crab cakes with the governor and stuff, you know?
Hey, yeah, it's amazing. The Americans are, who says Americans don't have second acts, right? I think that I still do nonfiction, to be clear. You know, I still write for New York Magazine, write for MLB and everything, but certainly, you know, I kind of wanted to, I'd written a young adult novel about 15 years ago. I always kind of liked something I always want to get back into. And then I kind of came across the idea of a potential story where, you know, my son's best friend was diagnosed about eight years ago with a disease called spinal muscular atrophy. And they're about the same age. They kind of grown up together. And spinal muscular atrophy in layman's terms, or kind of a cheap way to put it, is it's a little bit like ALS, but for kids. It's a really horrible disease. And so it's something that we've lived with our family. And I always kind of, I've done a lot of work with the SMA community, and I've discovered, you know, there's nothing wrong with their minds at all, to any stretch of the imagination. Most people in SMA, frankly, are smarter than me. And so not that most people are in general are smarter than me, but more to the point, I kind of got fascinated with the idea of the way people treated them and the way people spoke with them. And and how they kind of treated them differently and how frustrating that was. So I just got an idea of doing some sort of fiction or character around that. And then I kind of stumbled across the story. And then once I figured out Daniel, who's the main character of the story, I you know, I'm a nonfiction guy, and I've always, whenever I would hear fiction writers say, oh, the character just took on a mind of their own and just the story, I was like, yeah, that's pretentious. I totally understand it now. I get it. Once I kind of got Daniel, he kind of went his own way, and I just kind of followed along. So it was fun to do. I think I'm going to do it again. They're very happy with how this turns out, that I'll go do another day. But don't worry, there will still be plenty of sports writing and nonfiction stuff.
Man, I got so many places to go with you, because I'm such a fan of yours and sort of following your career through all of this. And I would just say this from a writing perspective. When I think of writers in the modern sense of a writer, feels to me like you're a guy that writes just to write. And I'm a writer. I can't afford to do that, right? Like I'd like to sit here 10 hours a day and write. I'm an old sports writer. It's what I do. Right. Now it's more like sending out proposals for my crab cake tour. That's a writing skill that I use as a sales tool or a business tool or whatever. But like, you write the way I would write, you know, just a lot, you know, and yeah, just there's a lot of like writing in your mind about all sorts of things. And you have found the internet to be this freedom trail beyond Deadspin all these years later.
Yeah, you know, I started my first website. It wasn't, we didn't call it a blog back then. It was just like a journalism website in like 1998. So, you know, for me, the internet has always felt like this place that, like, I come from the newspaper world, and I was like, wait, I can just write as long as I want. This is amazing.
I felt the same way, dude. Yeah, like, I got edited in the 80s when I got smacked around enough to not have an ego in 1989.
Oh, of course.
When they say, kid, the hole's 10 inches. I don't care if it was David Bowie or Billy Joel. It's right. A 10-inch hole, and I'd write it 15, and it'd be 9.6 by the time.
Yeah, if you're lucky. I know, I get it. And so for me, you know, I thought the reason we were all on the internet was to write. It turned out there was other reasons. But for me, you know, Deadspin was kind of like the big breakthrough kind of for my career. I was 30 years old already. Like, I think people have this idea that I was like some kid fresh out of college. Like, I'd struggled for a long time. But the nice thing about Deadspin, as much as I enjoyed it, you know, I think because Deadspin was such a success, and because it was so different in the sports world, I think people had this idea that I was some sort of entrepreneur or like internet visionary or something. I really wasn't very interested in that. I just wanted to write. And so, you know, ever since I left Deadspin, Sure, I'm sure I probably lost social clout by not tweeting all the time or constantly or getting in like flame wars or fights or anything. But, you know, me, this is what I wanted to do. This is all I ever wanted to do, is be able to write. So I just like to keep making stuff. You know, Roger Ebert, one of my writing heroes, he has a great line that says, you write, the muse visits during the act of creation, not before, which is to say, shut up and start writing. And that's really my kind of philosophy, is I just shut up and start writing. I sit down and start making stuff. And I've been very fortunate, knock on wood, to have enough people to let me keep doing it, that I've made it this far. I'm 45 years old now. So I only got, like, I don't know how long you're expecting on living, but if I can, I figure if I can just run out the clock and just die at my desk writing, I'll have beat the Reaper.
Well, I mean, as someone who always says when I die, it won't say radio guy, it'll just say writer on it, because I think of myself as a writer. I mean, that's what I think that's my foundational skill to everything I've ever done in life. And I find myself to be wildly judgmental of people who don't write in complete sentence, not well, but just don't punctuate. And like, I find the new world, and not texting and not informally, but I mean formally, like when you're out on Facebook, complete a sentence and look like you went to eighth grade. Like for me, when you don't, it affects how I interact with people. And that makes me, and dude, I'm from total blue collar, Archie Bunker's Dundalk, not to be judgmental about all that, but I always have been as a writer, because I went to school and I paid attention and I thought it was important to express yourself well, right? And and I find that it's a really sort of rare art. And I found this through hiring when I ran my radio station and wanted to have a website, that like, oh my God, these people write like they're in kindergarten. Like, not being mean, but more like, I can't publish that professionally. That's just not up to grade. And I'm sure you saw a lot of that at Deadspin early on, when you're getting people who say, I'm a writer, and you're like, maybe you're not.
Yeah, a little. And, you know, frankly, I see actually even more of it today, to be entirely honest. I feel like a lot of and not just in like partly it's people that not really caring about this. But frankly, I think you see a lot of large tech companies not caring about this. There's a lot of frustration I certainly see from a lot of big companies, whether it's Facebook or whether it's Twitter or whether even like larger publishing companies, with the idea that editors are somehow not important. And the idea that like writers are all entrepreneurs, and therefore they should, no one should edit them. No one should keep an eye on the work. No one should bounce around the ideas. Like, one of the great things, when I did Deadspin, I did not have an editor. And I know that's freeing for a lot of people, but it was actually kind of terrifying to me. I love working on ideas. I love workshopping ideas. You know, one of the things I love writing so much, a friend of mine once joked that my speaking style is, it's like being in a room full of a bunch of doors and I'm not sure which ones are locked or not. And I'll go to this one. Oh, no, that's wrong. That's locked. I'll go over here. Nope, that was locked. And then I go over here. Oh, it's unlocked, and I can walk through that one. Writing eliminates me. I'm able to edit myself, and have someone edit me, and they eliminate me going through the locked doors. And so I'm able to speak clearly. I'm able to express myself and communicate. And I do think one of the problems with communication in general, the reason we're always kind of yelling at each other, the reason everything is kind of truncated, and it feels like everything, the conversations get flattened. Like there's a lot of complicated, complex things to discuss in the world, but everything gets flattened because everyone is kind of talking past one another, or they're being clipped, or they're assuming the worst of the other person. I have firmly believe that if everyone just listens for a second and speaks clearly, I actually think people have much more in common and are generally more human, and there's more connection than possible. One of the themes of How Lucky is the idea that Daniel, who is unable to speak, is consistently frustrated because he can't be heard and people won't listen. And that is something that I meant to be a theme of the book, because I do think, as a big part of modern society, it's hard to just like, okay, can we just sit down and have a conversation and see if we can come to a place where we're all in a place of agreement. For me, that's what writing does, is a way to express myself and try to have hear the way other people express themselves at their best. And unfortunately, the way social media is set up and the way kind of media is run, we're in too much of a hurry. We have to hear what you have to say real fast. And if you say one thing they disagree, you're wrong. And it becomes a big fight. And I that's the way the internet is now. And maybe it's going forward, but I know myself well enough to know that I'm not going to be very good at that.
What's the old song? Everybody's talking at me, right? Will Leach is here. The book is How Lucky. He's a writer of writings, and you can follow him. Dude, at some point, a beer at the 40 Watt Club feels like something has to happen. You know,
I mean, be good. They're going to be happy to get that open. Some shows going down here. There's no question.
Oh, man, I got to make that happen. So there's so many directions to go here, but I want to go a little bit more into your book and peel back this kindness part of How Lucky and this beautiful story. And I don't want to be disrespectful anyway, but Deadspin was kind of mean at various points and certainly got a lot meaner, you know, after you lost control of this. This thing over 20 years, I was Nasty Nestor in the 90s. I was never particularly mean to anybody except the jerk that owned the baseball team. But there is a switch in all of us. My wife had cancer in 14 and 15 and watching doctors keep her alive and seeing the magnanimous nature of this man in Germany who saved her life twice. So I've had that journey. I've had two people in my life intimately incapacitated to the degree that you speak of. The valedictorian of my high school who had a 1590 on his SAT, bro, and was a really gifted person, went to Virginia Tech. He was an engineer. Found himself on Canadian crutches at our 5 year, in a chair at our 10, on a gurney at our 20. We lost him about 10 years ago. So I had this long relationship with a person that couldn't communicate with me as well as he'd like to. OJ Bergantz would be the other person, and everybody in my world knows OJ. OJ used to sit in my studio, ham it up with me. Now when I see him, he communicates slowly with his eyes on this device that's insane. But there comes a point when I'm there and the best of me has to come out and get in that room and say, all right, OJ loves me. He's seeing everything, hearing everything, and talking at me, with me, to me. And I just need to sit here and let him get it out. And it's going to take a minute through that computer, but this is a miracle. And I guess the how lucky and having someone in your life, it's impacted everyone in your life. And I would think makes your kids kinder.
Yeah, you know, I would say certainly from my own perspective, I would argue that Deadspin was – I wouldn't say Deadspin was mean. I would say Deadspin would called out people that had not – perhaps not used to being called out. But,
fair enough.
But I that's a fair
– It took on a whole different life than what you wanted it to be. I don't think doubt about that.
I mean, more to the point, like I think that like I do think, however, that I think we all, as we get older, our perspective on things change. I mean, listen, I lived in – one of the things I always joke, I lived in New York City for 13 years. I've now lived in Georgia for about 8. And when I lived in New York, my 5 best friends all worked in media. And so whenever we got together, we all talked about media stuff and who was going here and who was going here and what was happening in this. And when I moved to Georgia, like just nobody – cared what I did anymore, which was great. It totally like gave me a better perspective on everything. I didn't like, there's nothing that bores me more than like media stories or who's got this job. I just don't care about the stuff because it's just a job. Now it's a job that I love and I think I'm good at and I care deeply about, but I also don't think that the average person actually really cares about that stuff. It's given me a better perspective in a lot of ways. And it's also, I mean, anyone that has kids can tell you that it does, it can't help but expand your perception of the world, you know, and to see particularly, you know, I mean, we don't have to go down this rabbit hole, but I think that I would argue that
I love rabbit holes. It's what I do here. Please yes, do go down that rabbit hole.
Well, I just mean the more like the collective. I would say that it is reasonable to look at perhaps of the country and think that maybe the world's gotten a little cruder and meaner over the last 5 years. It's something that maybe you want to protect your kids from. And
God bless your state and God bless everyone that voted for freedom in your state. I'll just put that in there right now.
And again, to me, it's like, you know, I mean, politics is one thing, but I mean, I think it's just another thing to have two little kids and then turn on the television and having the president of the United States calling people like third grade names that you would ground your child for saying. And so I do think that I don't think that people are actually like that. And I think that because of the success or the megaphone that we had over 5 years, I think everything's just gotten a little bit cruder. And I think people have felt a little bit more comfortable letting kind of the worst parts of their personalities come out a little bit. And one of the things that I was hoping for the book to do is, you know, Daniel believes that people are good. It is very a fundamental nature of his personality. He talks a lot about how, like, sure, when you go on the internet, there's a lot of mean things. You'll see him all the time because no one ever says, hey, someone opened a door for me today and puts it on Twitter. Like, Twitter is naturally the sort of thing that is a reactionary and there's always a kind of negative bent. But his belief is that people want to be good, even when they are not always at their best. And clearly during the pandemic, I was not always at my best. I think a lot of people have not always been at their best, but people want to be good. And I truly believe that. And I think Daniel truly believes that. I think Daniel's experience has kind of spoken to the kindness that he sees in his everyday life. So I did, you know, certainly I want to tell Daniel's story, and hopefully it's a mystery and hopefully it's funny. But also, like, I do actually think, and this was true even in the Desmond days, I do think people are good, and I think they want to do well, and I want to do the right thing. And I think it's important to be reminded of that, because we are often surrounded by people loudly doing the wrong thing.
And especially in sports, right?
Like, yeah,
That's where Deadspin came in. That's where I came in to say, this guy's doing a lousy job. He's doing horrible things. Somebody has to report that, right? And there was always an audience for that, though, right? I mean, the kindness thing that that needs to come into the world, the thing that you're writing about now, instead of whatever we're writing about in the sports world of who's doing things the right way or the wrong way. And there's plenty of that still. I mean, I moved away from sports because for a lot of the same reasons you did. I didn't want to be around mean-spirited people and racists calling on Monday morning and saying, fire the black quarterback or the white quarterback or the coach, or like all the kill the quarterback and fire the coach thing. And I sense this in you, Will. It's not why our parents made us love baseball, right? I mean, like, I didn't get into sports for that or into sports journalism for that. I got into it because I love sports, not because I wanted to rip it down or be ripped down or be a part of that kind of conversation, you know?
And listen, you know, it can be sad to see too, because, you know, I have friends. I mean, obviously I've worked in sports media for a long time. I still do. And I have a lot of friends who – like it's almost hard not to become cynical about it. And when you work in sports media for that long, and for me, one of the foundations of Deadspin, really one of the foundations of my sports writing now, I love sports. Sports is too important for me to start getting cynical about it. I can't put it any better than that. Like, you know, if I wake up in the morning and I'm like, ugh.
What if you felt about the Cardinals the way I feel about the Orioles? What if you had been treated like complete
shit? It'd be hard.
For all of your adulthood, like when all you ever wanted to do was love the team. I built a sports radio station to love them. They threw me out 15 years ago, and I'm at the point – my last name's Aparicio, bro. I get at it honest. Right. I am here because my people came from Venezuela. My father came with his cousin who was a Hall of Fame baseman. And I don't go, and I'm – boisterous, and everyone around me says I don't go either, and I'm like, what would make you go? You still love it. And I want to love it again. I want someone to buy it. I want Cal, whatever. But it is really difficult when been through the cycle. No matter if you're a Knicks fan, it doesn't matter, you know, whatever you're a fan of, even if you're an Alabama fan, you know, it's sort of screwed up, right?
Yeah, well, the way that I approach it, and it's easier for me because I didn't have the specific circumstances that you had, which obviously were very difficult. But the way I always think of it is, you know, in 50 years, whoever owns the Cardinals, whoever owns the Orioles, whoever owns the Knicks, maybe hopefully the Knicks, the players are going to be gone, the owners are going to be gone, the coaches are going to be gone, the executives are gone. All of those people are going to be gone. They're going to have nothing to do with the franchise. But the fans are still going to be there, and the fans' kids are going to be there. The one constant that all of these things have are actually the fans. Everyone else is in it professionally, by definition. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to get paid for my writing about sports, but trust me, I buy way too much St. Louis Cardinals and Illinois basketball crap. I feel like I'm finally getting caught up on the money that I've given to sports throughout all the years. You know, I still love it. And always tried to remember that. It's why I, for example, like I'll go to Busch Stadium and I think I'm doing an interview with next time at Busch Stadium about the book before the game, but I won't sit in the press box at Busch Stadium. Like, that's just kind of my rule.
You're a fan there.
I'm a fan there. And I've sat in the press box at other places. You know, I've been to the World Series. I'll sit in press boxes. I've been to the Super Bowl. I'll do it. But like, for me, the Cardinals are like, I started liking sports because I liked the Cardinals and then discovered, oh, there are other sports. And like, that's like a sacred kind of thing for me. I have to draw those lines because the minute I see it from good-hearted people that have been doing this for a really long time, that just at a certain level, whether it's the way that they're treated by executives or the way they're treated by fans, or the way they're treated by social media, they wake up and be like, you know what, sorry, sports is not fun for me anymore. And I don't know, I just couldn't do it. Like, I write about a lot of things, whether it's sports or politics or movies or anything. And I can't do it without an enthusiasm for the topic. I worked as a business reporter for about 2 years and was horrible because I do not care about financial reporting. I was really, really bad. I thought I could like, oh, I'll be a good journalist. I'll learn about the topic and therefore I'll convey this knowledge to the reader because I've learned all this stuff. And I just couldn't do it because I just didn't care enough. I just didn't care enough. And therefore there was inevitably a ceiling on it. That to me is the cost of entry for me to be able to write about something is I have to care about it. And if I ever lost that about sports, I just don't have any business writing about any sports. Some people can do that. Some people have that professionalism that I actually respect. I wish I could do that, but I cannot write about sports without being emotionally invested in it. And even partially like my favorite team, cheering for my favorite team. Like I write about the Cardinals, MLB.com. And it's not like I say, you know who stinks? Every player on the Cubs. Like, I guess there's a certain amount of objectivity you have to have there. But I also don't hide the fact that I'm a Cardinals fan and I hope they win. And I think if I were doing that, I would be lying to the readers. In the same way, I'd be lying to the readers if I was pretending to be enthusiastic about sports when I wasn't.
I'd embarrass him if I call him one of the best writers in America, but he probably knows it. He's Will Leach. He is here. You can follow him at William F. Leach. It's spelled a little funny, L-E-I-T-C-H, if you're looking for him. How lucky is the book? And I've been lucky enough to be reading his work since Deadspin back in the day. So I'm going to give you my writer story and my writer pal. I'm going to act like one of your New York buddies, okay? So back in 13, the Ravens win the Super Bowl. I wrote a book on the first one with Brian Billick and Marvin Lewis, David Modell, the first time around. The second time, it was called Purple Rain. I never got sued by the purple guy himself, REIGN. I'm still waiting. At some point, somebody from Minnesota is going to send me some paperwork on that. I didn't make enough money on it, which is the point of the second book. I write the second book after Joe Flacco wins the Super Bowl and with Ray Lewis's last ride after being hurt, Ed Reed goes out, the Jacoby Joe, like this incredible story. They wound up playing a home game because they made a 4th-and-29 in San Diego on a screen pass to Ray Ray. So all of these miracles, the book wrote itself. Brian Billick's my partner in life and business. And he said, hey, how's the book coming along? And I'm like, well, you get shot in the first chapter, Bri. You know, sorry. And that's how the book begins, you know, the Harbaugh era. So I write this book and I'm all enthusiastic, right? Because to your point, there's nothing in life I love more than the Ravens, right? Like they're my life to your Cardinals. I was here when they came off the boat for all the above reasons. So, right. So I write this book and I'm going to the Ravens fan convention, Will, down in Ocean City, Maryland. It's Father's Day week. All right. So there's 12,000 Ravens fans ginned up. Beer in the tubs in the hotel rooms, old school, right? So they have a parade they've been doing since the Colts Corrals in the day. And I go down there with my books. I'm like, I'm going to sell some books this weekend, man. These are all Ravens fans. We just won the Super Bowl, $20. I got DVDs, CDs, posters, the whole deal. I go down there and I sat there in the heat. And I watched people come by with bird heads yelling, Super Bowl, we won the Super Bowl. And I got a book. And people come up to the book and they touch the book. And they open a book. That book ain't got no pictures in it. And I said, yeah, but it's got a lot of words, man. I mean, like, look, I'm Nestor. I've done the Ravens a long time. When I wrote this book, I learned stuff I could not have possibly known without going and sitting in Joe Flacco's house in Audubon, without sitting down with John Harbaugh. Like, I learned all of this stuff. I was coming home writing a book and saying to my wife, I can't believe what I didn't know about the football team. They just, like, it was so excited about it. And I put it out, and I sold 20 books to 12,000 people, Will. And when people came by, and this is what they said, books, I don't read new books. I ain't read new books since high school. And I'm like, I follow you on Facebook, so I sort of know that. But I mean, I'm telling you, when Trump got elected and when all this stuff happened, I thought to myself, no one's reading, right? No one's reading anything. Do you read a lot of fiction to be writing fiction? Because you write so much, like about the real Will and the life and the Cardinals and all of that stuff. I'm thinking, when do you have time to read fiction? Because I don't. I'm a complete nonfiction person.
It's hard. I don't think there's any question. I had to be real careful. I always – functionally, I try to be real careful anyway because sometimes I read really good fiction. I can't help but just steal the voice. I just don't even notice it. Dave Eggers is one of my favorite writers, and he was someone that I just kind of can't read before I start writing fiction. I read fiction – you know, I obviously read a lot of nonfiction. I subscribe to a ton of magazines. I read like every sports piece I can about the teams I care about. So obviously it's hard to get some in. But the nice thing about reading fiction to me, I read it for pure pleasure. Like every other bit of reading that I do has some sort of function. Either I need to know about this or this is important topic. fiction is a thing that I read for pleasure. It doesn't mean it can't be. Yeah, it can't be. It doesn't mean it can't be about something serious, or it can't be about something that like affects my life. But it, yeah, to me, reading fiction is, it's meant to be entertaining and pleasurable. And I know that not everybody feels that way about fiction. I know there's a certain serious writer sort of thing that like you're trying to capture the human condition and bring down and let people know how difficult life can be. And I hopefully there are some difficult circumstances in How Lucky. I don't mean to imply that, but certainly I feel like a book should be entertaining. And I first, like, I think that's actually the most important thing a fiction book should do. And it's to entertain first in the same way that a movie does. You know, again, going back to Roger Ebert, his thing was always that like a movie has to be entertaining. It doesn't mean it has to be stupidly entertaining. It doesn't have to mean that it has to be dumb, but it has to entertain before it can do anything else. And I do kind of feel that way. And so there's a lot of things that are going on in How Lucky, and a lot of some things that are serious, some things that are sad, some things that are funny, but more to the point, people have to enjoy the experience of writing it and of reading it. But if someone is like, I don't read books, I'm not going to read books at all, I kind of just like, I'm not going to, I feel like I can't talk them into it. Like I can't like put a cookie on top of every book. Like at a certain level, you have to meet me enough to be like, to want to read it. And if they don't, that's okay. There are people that will. And there's a ton of things. A ton of people love bird watching. Like they love it. I don't care. I'm not interested in watching in bird watching. So that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them or wrong with me. It's just something that we do this differently.
Golf, kind of,
yeah,
sort of.
I'm also there like that with golf.
Just don't need to spend the day doing that. I haven't read Hemingway. That's what I always say. I'm like, I don't have enough time to read Hemingway. Have you read Hemingway, Will Leach?
I've read Hemingway, but it's been years. I mean, it's been years. And I think that, you know, I think that now, I mean, the nice thing
about
books.
What's your favorite book? Give me a book that, other than How Lucky, like what's a book that I should read that I haven't read?
I would say if we're going back to books that really kind of inspired me, I would say that A Heartbreaking Work is Staggering Genius by Dave Eggers. It's actually a memoir. It's not fiction.
Say that
it's
again.
Called Heartbreaking
Work.
It's called A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius. Dave Eggers has written many, many books, but that was his breakthrough book. It's actually a memoir about how right when he's about to graduate from college, both of his parents died separately within like 6 months of one another, and he had to raise his younger son. But it's very, very, I'm sorry, his younger brother. It's this very, very smart, very sweet, very sad, but very funny kind of like postmodern book to me that is like what writing can do and what right kind of stuff. It's also a very Generation X book, kind of a Generation X kind of tentpole sort of book. That to me is a book that when I read that, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to figure out what I'm going to do with my life and career because I can't do that. I'm physically incapable of doing that. And hopefully I'm figuring out what I can now. But for me, that's a book that really kind of wiped me out to this day. I try to read it every couple of years to remind me, but not before I write fiction because then I'll just steal the voice.
It's the craziest thing in the world. I've been writing since I was 8 years old and, you know, sort of professionally since I was 15. I have never, ever, ever stroked a sentence of fiction of any kind or thought like I just don't think it's a skill set. You know, I've done radio for 30 years. People are like, you'd be good at play by play. I'm like, no, I would not. I have done it. I have embarrassed myself. No. So for you, did you ever write fiction? I mean, was it something you practiced at in high school or something?
I never wrote
a poem either, Bob.
I've definitely never
wrote it.
I have definitely never wrote a poem. That part is true. I've never written a poem. I would not know how to do that. For fiction, you know, it's funny. At first, I thought doing with all the nonfiction I do, going into fiction would be a little easier because the problem with writing nonfiction, of course, is that you're stuck with what actually happened. You have to just stick to the dumb facts of the things that went on. Whereas with fiction, you're like the god of the universe. You'd be like, you know what? I want that person to walk in that room, so I'm going to make it walk in that room. The problem with that—
This is what I'm going to make her look like.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem with that, though, is in nonfiction, particularly in the last few years, we've all just kind of accepted that if someone does something irrational or unusual, we're just like, yep, people are kind of crazy. People will do strange things. But in fiction, everything has to have a justification. Everything has to fit and click in a certain way. So writing fiction is easier in the first draft, but much harder in the second draft because then you have to go back and fix everything. But I'm working on the second one now. I'm working on the next book now. I said HarperCollins has been very happy and they're very pleased with how lucky with the quality and how it's been selling. So they're going to let me do another one. So I'll do a couple of these every year. But the goal is to do one of these every 2 years. And then to keep writing my sports stuff throughout. And if I get to do that and then die at my desk, I'll be happy.
How lucky is the book? Will Leach is our guest. I know our time is short. I really appreciate you spending some time. I remain your biggest fan in Baltimore, and one day a crab cake and a beer on us. You'll never have a tourist crab cake in this town, Will. I promise.
Absolutely. I promise.
Good luck with the book, man.
Of course. Thank you very much. I'd love to get there, and please holler anytime. Keep the great work.
One day it's my goal to be significant enough to be a guest on your show, so I'm going to keep working on that. Right?
Okay, well, we can make that happen.
Will Leach joining us here. He's William F. Leach out on Twitter, and the book is How Lucky, a crack at fiction from the original Deadspin guy who loves the Cardinals in Illinois. We appreciate you, Will. Take care of yourself down in Athens. I'm Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.